What's up, Mad Town? It's your girl, Brandi Grayson, on the Black Conversion Show. You're listening to 92.7 FM. I was about to say MDA is WMDX. I'm so glad to be here this Saturday morning with you guys. Last week, we had a blast. I had in the studio last week, April Kageya and Jayla, and we talked a little bit about Black history, a little bit about Black news, and then we got into conversations about relationships, especially male and woman relationships. And we said that we wanted to bring on some more Black men to have conversations. So this week I decided to go all the way left and I invited my baby daddy to be co-host with me today. His name is Eric Upchurch. And we're just, you know, today we're going to talk about co-parenting, advocacy, our relationship, and some of just discussing like how do we go from hating each other to being in good spirits and I think like on a good terms with each other and co-parenting and navigating white systems, and especially the system for our son and the school that he attends is so, oh my God. So anyway, Eric, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do in the world?
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Baby mama, Brandi Pearl Grayson.
Why you gotta say
what
my whole
up,
name?
Facebook?
Say my whole name though.
Yeah. It's kind of wild being on here because I feel like this is mad growth. This is a testimony. This is a testimony moment right here.
Testimony of what?
This is for Testimony Sunday. I'm going to save that.
Okay.
But, Eric Stephen Upchurch II, and mission, vision, purpose for me is to help leaders gain the insights and the resources that they need to live into their purpose. And that takes many forms, and I'm happy to talk about some of them today.
Okay, cool. So we're just going to start and say, like, why are you even here? Like, why did I invite you today? Why did you decide to come? I think that's a good place for us to start.
I decided to come because the ancestors said, for the people. But no, you know, as you know, we're talking about the challenges and the victories with our son in the school system, parenting. It ain't easy. Mm-mm. Trying to navigate discipline and also, you know, our work that we get to do between us. And, you know, we had some wins that feel good. And that's something that could be of value to the people.
And I think so, too. I mean, so because how do we go from like, I just want y'all to know, listeners, again, you're listening to the Black Conversion Show on 92.7 FM. And I just want to like just point out the fact that Messiah 7, right? And I could not stand my baby daddy. Like, I could not stand him. And didn't want to like be in the same vicinity as him. Didn't want to talk to him. Didn't want to be around him. And I know a lot of moms and fathers, we have that challenge, right? We have the challenge of being in good relationship with each other so that we could be solid parents and, you know, co-parent our kids in a healthy way. But it took us 7 years to get here. So I'm going to ask you, Eric, how did we even begin to get on this journey of being able to be in the same space so that we could be solid for our son?
Yeah, well, I think at some point you just kind of realized that
Boy
I was
bad.
Right. And, you know, the rest is history. I think, what happened for you? You know, how did you realize?
Yeah, right. How did you realize you were the problem? Yeah, okay.
But honestly, though, I think that this is it. This is part of it. Being able to laugh about what's there. Our thoughts aren't real and being able to see them for what they are as triggers, traumas, patterns, programs, as you said earlier, and being able to enjoy them to a certain extent, laugh at them and learn from
but
them.
But it don't be that easy, though.
Of course
I mean, it's not.
Not
like we woke up one day and was like, okay, we're going to be cool because we love our sons. Because a lot of people be like, well, you just got to love your kids and put them in front. But that's not how this works because there's a lot of trauma, a lot of past hurt. There's a lot of baggage. There's a lot of like blaming. You know, there's a lot of justifying right or wrong that we often put ourselves in as human beings. So again, like what else got us here? We laughed, but it wasn't. For you personally, what did you have to do? What shifts did you have to make internally?
Yeah, speaking of me personally, I had to see you. I had to get to a place where I could start to appreciate the things that I hated about you.
dang, and hate is such to a see, powerful
well,
hey, word.
That's what it was. And and you, of course, you can't hate what
don't
you don't love.
Well,
you
know don't
what
worry I mean? About so, it. I got haters everywhere.
Hey, there you
haters
go.
Haters in the building.
You're doing something right. We got some sound effects back there, Nate.
In the building.
Haters in the building. But no, really, it was me being able to see that, you know, anytime we have such a pent-up anger towards someone, mm-hmm. what we're really seeing is something in ourselves that we want to change, and that bothers us
yeah.
so much. And I had to accept that the things that I was blaming you for, I was just doing in a different way. It just looked different. Mm. And I wanted to change those. Wow, this is exactly what we were talking about with Messiah.
Yeah.
I wanted to change those in me, but my way toward that is trying to address them in you. And so yeah. it becomes a contention. So when I started to appreciate you, I it was easy.
So what you're saying is that you was a hater. You know, he was hating Raider. He's a hater. And then he realized that
y'all see what I'm talking about? You see what I mean?
He was a hater Raider. So what he ended up doing is being able to identify some of his strong emotions and scripts and stories about who I am and how I was showing up, and was able to identify the things he didn't like that was actually a projection of himself, right? Because we often project what's internal outward onto other people, that the things that we need to change. That's what I heard you say.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. it's self-awareness, which is easier said than done, of course, because a lot of people will say they're self-aware, but it's very, very subtle. And the more that I was present with myself and open and less judgmental of myself, yeah. I could see myself more.
And, this whole thing around presence, you know, again, you guys are listening to 92.7 FM, the Black Conversion Show out of Madison, Wisconsin. And on our show, we talk about different topics, issues, and specifically topics and issues that impact and affect people known as Black. Because I'm Black and we Black and we deal with Black stuff, and being Black is political and systematic all the time. And it's political just being Black. So you're listening to politics in the news, and when you listen to us, you hear it. So here we are. So we're talking about today, like, how do we... Well, let me back up for a second. So on the show, we often talk about the impact and effects and the residue of white supremacy, like existing in this, and how it affects our relationships with Black men, Black women and women, Black men and Black men, and how oftentimes we are projecting vile thoughts. We're angry at each other. And sometimes we don't even like each other and we don't even know each other. And that's all the conditioning of existing in a system that's taught us to hate, taught us not to love each other. And really at the foundation of it is that it forbade us to love ourselves. So how can I love you if I don't love me? If I don't see grace in me, if I don't have grace for me, compassion for me, right. empathy for me, sympathy, I don't look in the mirror and be like, oh, girl, you bad. Or I look in the mirror and say, oh, you so ugly, you're this, you're dumb, you're this. Then I can't help but to project that out in all of my relationships. So a lot of times in the Black community, there's a lot of toxicity, right? But not because we're bad or people are bad, but because the systems that we exist in that really stresses us out and doesn't provide us or allow the space or opportunity to heal, to do the trauma recovery, to go into, I would say, inward, like you said, becoming present to yourself, going inward, and really getting to this space of self-discovery of who you're being in the world versus who you desire to be. That's not something we even talk about. So in order for us to get to where we're at right now as Black parents and Black parents of a beautiful Black 7-year-old boy, we had to do some going in work, right? And in the system of white supremacy, what would you say in this system that it's taught you about Black motherhood and Black women? Like, what were you trained to think, believe about the opposite sex and Black specifically?
Well, something that you said that stood out to me was about having the space to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the training, I think, comes from our not knowing how to do work in the midst of the storm.
Yeah.
And I think that is the most pervasive thing, because no one's going to say, I trained him how to hate women. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
You know, but we survive circumstances and we just are like passengers on this domino effect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So no one's going to take credit for it, but it's still happening. And because we don't have the tools or haven't practiced the tools on how to be self-aware, be present, then we kind of we kind of fall into line with those domino effects from
absolutely
oppression.
So because we exist in a world where you're not even allowed to be present for yourself at all, right? We go from one task of doing to another. We have to work 8 to 10 hours a day. Then we go home, we feed the kids, we get them ready for bed. We barely have time for ourselves. Some people work 2 jobs, right? So to actually hold the space for yourself to get into self-discovery of who you are versus who you're being in the world and who you desire to be takes a whole nother level of brokenness, I think.
That's interesting.
No, like seriously.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
I mean, like, I feel like most times in our life, we have to hit rock bottom before we go up, right? Like we have to lose things, lose everybody. And sometimes we literally lose our minds, right? Hmm. If you pay attention to people who expand in the world, they first have to contract, right? So you usually contract, meaning that something breaks. Like, you know, when you're building a muscle, you're breaking the muscle down. And usually you break, something occurs, and then you find yourself trying to dig yourself out, and in the process of digging yourself out, just like a butterfly trying to get out the cocoon, then that's when you find your expansion.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. It takes challenges for you to grow, which is absolutely true. And I think our challenge as parents and our journey between me and you and for our son is that without the challenge, I don't think we would have gotten here.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. And I think the school challenge for Messiah even got us closer.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think navigating the system of education in Madison has been the most stressful dehumanizing experience, one of the dehumanizing experience I've ever had, because it just occurs to me as a parent, right? On one end, I want to, I don't know, I just want to protect my son. I want to protect him. I want to hold space for him. I want to stop racist people from being racist. I want to protect them from the glares, the discrimination, the prejudice. But I can't, right? Especially right. In this environment where everything's whitewashed and people don't want to talk about race or cultural competence, so there's not a lot of training for teachers, especially in private schools. So it's always the kid that's like the problem, right? And I think that whole interaction for us has caused us to have to work closer together, I think, and get into discovery of how we've been showing up.
Yeah, I think it's all about figuring out what's there for you and instead of what's happening to us. And we've been able to navigate some tough conversations. So, yeah,
tough.
Kudos.
I think more than tough conversations, y'all. I'm telling y'all, like I said to y'all last week, navigating these school systems where my son feels is in a place where he's not feeling seen, heard, and often targeted in a sense, just creates this conflict inside of me. Like,
yeah,
I can't
that's
even...
That's a way to put it.
Yeah, I can't
this
even...
This is a conflict of some sort.
A sort of me wanting to teach him how to navigate the system and then wanting to smack the taste out of people's
right,
mouth. So anyway, you're listening to 92.7 FM, The Black Conversion Show. We'll be back in a jiff. People, you are tuned in to the Black Conversion Show with your girl Brandi Grayson on 92.7 FM. Right before our commercial break, I was just saying that I have this conflict inside of me as I support my son and my 7-year-old son. If you guys don't know, he's 7 years old. He attends what school? He attends. I always say it wrong.
Wingra.
I always want to say Winger. Winger. Say it again.
Yep, that's all right.
Say it again.
You got it. Wingra.
Winger.
Wing and ra.
Wing and ra. Wing ra. Rock. I don't know why I can't pronounce
this. This is actually a tutorial on how to say Wingra, folks.
Wingra. Okay. Ring and whatever. So anyway, he goes there to this private school. I think he's like the only, well, what is it? 4 black boys in the whole school?
Just a few of them,
maybe
yeah.
5. Yeah. There's 135 students maybe in this school, 150, 135 students. Now, the reason that, you know, we decided to send them there because it's small. It's like, what would you say the structure is? They do a lot of outside play. They play a lot. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a democracy school when they get to decide what they're going to do for the day. So they get some choices in a smaller classroom with more teachers. So we thought this would be a good place. And let's just recognize, too, that they do have a black principal, Torsi. So we were really excited about that, mm-hmm. who's a really cool dude. So we thought, like, let's give this a try because we assumed...
Torsi Percy's cool.
He's super cool. And we just assumed that it would not work in public schools because our public schools are going to help. But anyway, when we decided to send him there, I don't think that we were prepared. Were you prepared? Maybe he was prepared, or maybe I wasn't.
What I would say to that is that it is, I mean, very clear to us the achievement gap in schools and how whether you read White Women Teaching Black Boys, written by Eddie Moore and someone else, I'm forgetting the name, forgive me, but or other literature, the achievement gaps are clear. And we wanted to make sure that our son had the attention that he needed, but more so the high expectations of the teachers that is required for academic excellence, which you don't see often in schools, in Madison Public Schools.
Yeah. And we kept him, we homeschooled him, as most of you guys know, well, who follow us or whatever, homeschooled him for his first 3 years, and he's seven. Yeah. And he probably operates, and did really well. He operates at like a fifth grade level. So we thought, let's put him in school so he can get some socialization and, you know, learn how to navigate these systems and people. And it just has not been fun for us. What for you, Eric, would you say has been the most challenging, and what for you is the solution?
Good question, Ms. Grayson. Wow.
Shut up.
You know, honestly, I want to say that it's the most challenging has been navigating the dynamic between how to be responsible and holding him accountable.
Yeah, for his actions.
For his actions, and also recognizing that he's still surviving a system that is not, doesn't see him fully.
Yeah, and it's not for him.
It's not for him. Yeah. And so, you know, and I remember when we were talking about this, you said something about this before the break, how you want to protect him. And I remember our conversation. You remember that, where I was talking, you were saying you wanted to protect him. And then I was sharing about, or just reminded you briefly about how, where you came from and what made Brandy Grayson, Brandy Grayson.
Yeah. I came from the gutter.
With a straight face, folks. Can we settle this? Brandy say she from Chicago, but she done spent all her life in Madison, Wisconsin.
Well, that's true. I have spent a long time here. However, the foundation of my education and my understanding of the world came from being in Chicago, because we all know and understand, like, the foundation of children is set between the ages 0 and 10. So we moved after 10, so I was safe.
Yeah, true that.
I was safe. I had some different perspectives, and, you know, it just, it was rough, but it also taught me how to navigate and survive. And for our son, it just feels like, you know, like, it's different for him. Like, it's not just him surviving the streets or the hood or the stuff that's happening outside in the neighborhood. It's him surviving inside a building where he should be safe.
Right.
That's how I feel.
And not knowing how to navigate the feelings or understand the feelings that he's feeling.
Yeah, and when we talk about racism, it's not something that, you know, like, when you navigate the streets, like, you learn how to survive in the streets. You learn how to survive gangs. You know, you know what to say. You know where to go. You know where not to go. You know what time to go outside, what time not to go outside. You have people in the community, the neighborhood, you know. So you have, even with inside, you know, what we call projects or whatever, there was community. There was still safety inside buildings. And I know that might sound weird to people, but I still felt safe. I never felt unsafe. Mm. And when I got to Madison in Whiteville, I was 11 or something, or 12, and I didn't understand racism. So I didn't even know when I was being perpetrated against. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand how white people could yell at me as a little kid and nobody did nothing. Right? Like, nobody would move. And they would just, and I'd be looking like, so y'all not going to say nothing? But I didn't have the words, and I didn't understand what was occurring around me. And now, as someone who's awakening, and in the process of awakening, I'm watching my son navigate this. And I swear, I just want to go in all the time. Yeah. And again, like, navigating and holding that space of holding him accountable, because first of all, he is the son of me and you.
Right.
And we are pretty
something
else, you know, and I mean, in a good way.
Humble brag.
Yeah.
We something else.
You know,
we see it.
And then you combine that, he's a perfect hybrid of us. So we want to hold him accountable, and we want to hold the school accountable. But also, I get tired of teaching, because I feel like we're supporting him, navigating with him, trying to navigate our own, you know, co-parent relationship, trying to hold space with one another, not getting too upset or too triggered. And then we have to go into these other spaces and hold space for the white people.
I will say, though, going in those spaces, I think being on the same page, because we've done a good job of checking in before and after
meetings. Yes.
You know, just like, okay, what are we gonna do. So mm-hmm. that, and what I like about that is we're not letting their narrative or agenda or perspective color our direction. We're like, okay, this is what this is where we at with it.
This is what he needs.
Okay. Yeah. And then, and so when we go in there, most of the time mm-hmm. we're on the same page.
Yeah, I would say most of the time we are. So, okay, what is for you the hardest part of navigating this for Messiah?
Yeah, it is finding ways to communicate with him where I'm not becoming I'm not mirroring the thing that he's surviving.
And, say that again.
Not mirroring the thing that he's surviving, which happens, whether it's in our discipline and we just want him to act right because, you know, and what that actually is we're dealing with our own
trauma
because we remember when somebody yelled at our parents for not disciplining us or not controlling us or whatever. And we remember getting yelled at. Mm-hmm. So I think just seeing that part of me and then stepping out of that way and finding a way to really help them get it, not just help them practice compliance, which is not the teaching and learning. It's survival.
It's survival. So for context, y'all, for a little bit more context, our son was homeschooled and he started at Winger. Started there last fall. So he's only been in school for like 5 months. He doesn't have much experience. And I say a month into going to the school, he started having issues with getting physical with kids. And then we're like, where is this coming from? Where
happening?
Is this aggression coming from?
Because it's not happening
he's
in other places.
He's not doing this anywhere else. And he's involved in other social activities. He's everywhere with us all the time. He's hanging out with kids in the neighborhood, with his family. But he's being really aggressive. So we started the conversation with disciplining him and giving him consequences. Like, you can't be acting like this. And I think for me, it reminded me of my mom. Like, don't be acting like this around these white people. And I'm going to have to whoop your butt. You have these white people calling me. Right, and I feel like that is where I was living at first. Mm-hmm. And we had to do some just like self-discovery of like what really is going on and how can we advocate and protect our son for what we then realize isn't all about his behavior. There's something else occurring inside of him that's making him angry. And he's not able to articulate it because God knows he's only 7. So we're going to come back and talk more about that in his experience. You're listening to Black Conversion Show. Right now, folks, I am back. Your favorite hostess with the mostest, Brandi Grayson, on 92.7 FM, The Black Conversion Show. Today, my co-host is my baby daddy. His name is Eric Upchurch II. He does a lot of work leadership development, coaching, meditation, somatic breathing, all that consciousness stuff is what he does. But before we went on break, we were talking about the dynamics of navigating systems that don't see our humanity, don't see the humanity of our child, supporting our kid and understanding like this is the context because he's 7, so he doesn't understand why he's getting treated differently or pointed out. He's not understanding a lot of the dynamics and trying to help him develop that eye and filter and navigate his feelings inside of the systems where something doesn't feel safe or right for him has been a big challenge. What I would like to ask my baby daddy to do is share your experience, because he took 2 days out of his week and went to the private mm-hmm. school where our son goes to and just stayed there all day, witnessing the dynamics of the teachers, the kids on the playground, inside the schools, and all kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, summarize what you seen, what you saw.
Well, I would say the first thing that I observed was that there were people who were just going about their days thinking that that's just what they're doing. And this is something that I saw also with a client of mine who's at a higher education institution. And of course, I'm not going to give their name, but they experience similar dynamics where people are just going throughout their lives doing their job. And they're all well-intentioned. They all feel as though they're doing a service. They're paying attention. They're being caring.
Mm-hmm.
And what I observed at the school was that, you know, there were good people that were doing the best that they knew how to do,
mm-hmm.
which I think is one of the biggest challenges of recognizing that the people who we want to change feel like
they're already doing good.
They're doing good and they're doing their best.
Yep.
And they are doing their best to the best of their knowledge and the tools they have and their understanding.
Yep.
And that's exactly what I saw.
Yep.
So with that context, it helped me to be more of an observer than somebody who was trying to whiplash folks into shape. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I could be there calm and just see it for what it was. And what I saw, of course, was, you know, Messiah being a kid, other kids being kids. And, you know, we have teachers who, if you ask them, they're looking at so many students.
Right.
And they just so happen to notice that the black one is the one
doing something.
Doing something.
Right. And let's just acknowledge that they can't help but to notice the black boy doing something in a sea of whiteness.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like you being red and standing outside and everybody else purple. You're going to see you. You're standing out plain as day,
right.
Which means that anything that he does, they identify immediately. Whereas the other kids around him doing the same thing, they don't identify.
Right.
And he starts to notice it and says it. Well, they doing it too.
He notices it. He feels it.
Yeah.
And in some cases, I mean, he didn't really start saying that until we observed it and was like, this is what I'm seeing. But naturally, he's seeing other people, the white kids, do things that and they're getting away with it. And it appears that to him, well, why can't I do this? Am I different? What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
All of these things. And that creates a kind of frustration that he was lashing out. And so the lashing out part,
right.
We got to be like, hey, listen, son, there's better ways to handle
your
emotions.
Your anger. Yeah.
You know, this is what we, so we're working with him on that.
Yeah.
But then I can't just talk to him. We're also talking to
teachers. Right. You can't just teach him. You got to teach the people around him.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's exhausting. It's freaking exhausting being here. It's exhausting navigating school systems for my son. It's exhausting navigating contract negotiation around whiteness and people like, oh my God, I'm triggered. Take over the conversation. Go ahead.
Well, I think what makes it exhausting for me, honestly, what makes it exhausting for me, look, you didn't talk yourself into exhaustion.
Yes.
What makes it exhausting for me is, I should say what makes it less exhausting for me, because mm-hmm. I feel that deeply.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, you know, surviving whiteness is a thing. But what has made it less exhausting for me is waking up to what's really there, in the same way that allowed me to be present with you.
Yeah.
Is seeing, okay, this is what that really means.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can hear that. When I'm
not there yet. I'm not in the place where I'm just like, I'm waking up and I'm just noticing that these are human beings who don't get it and who don't have the analysis. It is
because our son's in danger.
Right. That's how I feel. Yeah. I feel like my son's in danger. I feel like when I'm sitting at these meetings with white folks for the city, trying to negotiate contracts, and I'm telling them like, this is what's going on. And they're just like, well, we don't know what we can do. It might be anti-blackness happening. Yes, this is racist. We actually do feel you on that. But there's nothing we can do. And that's the same conversation we're having in the school with people, where we're constantly saying like, hey, this thing is happening and it's actually invoking this aggressive response from our son, because remind you, he's 7. So when you have a brain that hasn't fully developed, and most adults too, they could be 45 and still haven't developed the emotional intelligence, right, to master their responses, right? Because the first thing he feels is sadness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when we were able to help him identify, like, what are you really feeling before you go in, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sad. And then that makes me mad. So the next thing I'm going to do is lash out, right? Somebody take a ball from me, I'm not going to take the ball. I'm going to push them. And I'm going to push them because they said something to me earlier, or I said something to my teacher.
Or they were part of a group that was laughing at me, or a group that got away with something.
Talking about my hair, or somebody who said something. I tried to tell the teacher and the teacher ignored it. But as soon as a student tells the teacher on me, now I'm in trouble. They're asking me to take a walk like that. And he's only 7.
Yeah. That was a hard part for me, is seeing his emotions and trying to figure out, what do we do about this, especially in the midst of people who just don't have the tools, and realizing that the tools, now I'll to their credit, they do listen to us. They try.
They
you know
try,
what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
they do.
We're like, hey, these are the steps. This is what works here.
I think they know they can't.
They
cannot not listen to
us. They don't want them problems.
They don't want no problems.
At the same time, though, they also genuinely
care
and want to do better
and
lack the tools. And I think that's the same with parents, too,
right.
Where we want to do better for our children.
Mm-hmm.
But what do we do when you see them acting up?
Well,
and
for people,
how do you navigate that?
Yeah, and for us black people, generally speaking, we've learned to beat their.
Right.
You know what I mean? You act up, we beat your butt. Like, you don't get to be like that. You don't get to act like that. And that's the piece that me and Eric struggle with. I know I struggle with it. I struggle not grabbing him up every time I get a call and reminding him, like, you need to listen to the teachers. You need to keep your hands to yourself. You need to. And then I have to be reminded through engagement, really, with Eric about what the dynamics really is. And if he's experiencing anger and sadness at school, in a 7-year-old brain, with the only thing he has to do is like, or hiss. Like, he hasn't developed everything he needs to develop to be all emotionally intelligent. And so
that's where we create the safe spaces for him to do that.
Yeah.
And the safe space is not getting yelled at and getting threatened with violence, because all that teaches him to do is survive us in addition to surviving the system.
Yeah, and let's not don't act like we just came up with this epiphany, because we wanted to whoop his butt. I think he got a couple whoopings, actually.
He was definitely strongly disciplined in multiple ways.
And I think for us, it was like, what are we doing?
Right.
This isn't working. And there's something deeper. Like, there's a root cause here that's causing him to be this way, because he's not this way anywhere else.
Right, right. And so how do we get a child to process their feelings and be present with deep emotions that adults have trouble accessing?
Exactly.
And something that I've learned about is you hear about play therapy and breath work. Yeah. And I learned some of this from the folks at The Reconnected. Check them out. But also, you know, it correlated deeply with our insight strategy and our practice of infinite presence, where it's about finding ways to identify layers of your experience so that you can work with it.
Because
if you don't know what's affecting you, you can't do nothing with it. You're just a domino falling forward into the next moment, into the next trauma, into the next habit.
Yeah, and you're being controlled by the outside environments, which is part of a lot of our challenges as people known as Black, and just not with our youth and our children, but also with our adults. I mean, I'm the CEO of Urban Triage, you know, for the people, by the people. We employ the people we serve. And with that, we do trauma recovery, and everybody's coming with their baggage, right? Even when people are great. So I have staff that are phenomenal, and they don't even realize that they're phenomenal. So I have to remind them every day that you're more than competent, you're more than able. And I'm not the kind of person that gently reminds people of anything. So if you know my personality, my way of reminding you is throwing your ass in the pool. Okay, I'm just going to throw you in the pool. And what you're going to do is you're going to swim. And most of my staff swim, and they're like, oh my God, I can swim. I'm actually really dope. But what I'm trying to do is try to be a little softer version of Brandy. It works some days. Some days I'm not.
Well, what you're doing is you're creating, you're giving them more evidence to reconfirm the positive aspects of themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what we see in our day to day is negative confirmations
of
how bad we are, how, you know,
inferior
whatever,
we are, inferior. We're not good enough.
And for children, they get that too.
Yeah, they do.
And when they come home to us, what are they being reminded of? What are we confirming?
Because they go
them?
To school and they're reminded that they're this, they're that. They're not good enough. They're not. They're ignored. When they have a question, their hands are ignored. But as soon as they put their hands on someone else or get too close, because that's what 7-year-olds do. They just do too much.
Do
have you ever been in a classroom with a 7-year-old? Girl, they all over the place. So, white kids be yelling, doing all kind of stuff. But when they're the ones that's already always targeted versus targeting a whole class and saying, hey, all y'all need to chill out.
Right. So how do we equip them, and what do we do to help them process their feelings?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with adults.
Adults too.
It's finding ways to get present. And you can't do that when your sympathetic nervous system, you're jacked up because we carry low grade levels of stress.
I call it the automatic nervous system.
The autonomic nervous system
I call
as well.
It automatic.
Where the autonomic dealing with survival. Dealing with your digestion, your relaxation, parasympathetic, your fight or flight, autonomic is your freeze and or fawn, trying to appease to someone. And when we're tied up navigating stress and we're still surviving, we're still surviving the beef, we're still surviving the work issue, we're still surviving the school issue, even
intimate issues,
co-parenting issues, all of that. So those are coming into
our
attempt to parent.
Yeah.
And now we're surviving through our kids because we're pent up, so we can't take
what they come to
what
dish
they're
out.
Coming to. You know, we can't take what they're going through.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh, well, get in here.
Get it together. Let me whoop your butt. Yeah.
So a big part of helping them navigate is getting out of our own way and seeing what's in our way. And part of that is, you know, relaxed breathing, slow, deep breathing. And when you spend time first acknowledging a challenging moment, and then you acknowledge what you really want that moment to be, and then you spend time breathing deeply and just being aware of yourself, mm-hmm. you're telling your
system
parasympathetic
to
nervous system, you're saying, hey, it's mm-hmm. okay.
I got you.
I'm able to chill.
Yep.
I'm safe because yep. of the slow breath. And now you're more aware
of what's,
what's happening, what your experience is. And that can teach you and help you gain insights that move you out of the way. So when you see your child act up,
yeah.
you're correcting them, not from the standpoint of, I don't want these people to see me this or
right.
what will
they
think?
Right, I don't want you to be acting these white people.
What will my baby mama think? Is she, am I going to hear her mouth again? Because,
and will,
you know.
And do.
So rather than that, we're able to be present. And then how do we be present with the children? The children can do this breath, and I did this with Messiah.
Yeah.
And when he woke up, when he got up after this breath, mm-hmm. he I saw him playing differently. I saw him more attentive and more calm
present.
And more present. But also, we don't have to be calm to be present parents. And the last part I'll say is that we let them play, and we work within the play to help them tell a story that processes their feelings.
Yeah, like most child therapists, right? Like, so when you take your child to a therapist, when they experience trauma or any, you know, distressing situation, then they will reenact those situations in play, whether it's with dolls or cars or trucks, and they'll identify, like, who's this person? Who's that person? And they'll actually act out how it's occurring to them, right?
Same and with drawing, too.
Yeah, and drawing, and how it affected them. So our work with Messiah is really now based in, and we've tried a lot. So now we're in this phase of trying breathing and playing to help him process his day. Like, what happened today? What did your teacher say? What did your principal say? And what we've also discovered in that play is what have you discovered, Eric, in that play?
So with the play, what we're actually doing is we're having an intimate, deep conversation with our children, mm-hmm. and we're getting a picture of their
children,
experience.
You got one.
Well, I'm talking to the community now.
You're about to have another child. Why you didn't tell us that you were baby?
I wanted to save it for later, folks, but this just then. But no, really, we're having a deep conversation about their experience. And when they play, they're recreating their experience. And that's when we get to learn versus, y'all be quiet or don't do that.
Down.
Or their play scares you in a way because it triggers you.
Yeah.
So you don't know what to do. So when we play, recognize that it's a conversation. And the more we can get them to create in that play, mm-hmm. the more we get to learn about their experience. So we did this. And we played out a day in school. Mm-hmm. And what I learned was that we got to work in the dynamics. The things we would coach them to do, we got to practice that.
Practice those
and
dynamics
play
when
that.
They occur.
And because it's a safe environment, just like that slow, deep breath, it hit home and he's had better days.
Yeah, when we return, we're going to talk more about play and how to support our kids in navigating these systems and to support ourselves in navigating these systems with our kids. You're listening to 92.7 FM, The Black Conversion Show. We'll be back in a minute. But you have to understand. All right, we are back with 92.7 FM, The Black Conversion Show. And yeah, that's my baby daddy talking in the background like he didn't know that we were about to go on. Like, you know you're supposed to stop talking until I do the introduction, okay?
That's why I'm here, folks.
You see how
y'all
they...
Y'all thought this was going to be easy?
You see how the producer tried to ease us in with some soft music to help us, you know, calm down as we get ready to ease on out of here.
I'm trying to be so
helpful.
Here
he go in the background, messing up the transition. So anyway, before break, we were talking about, what were we talking about? You were actually talking.
We were talking about how to navigate getting out of your own way so that we can help our kids process
and what
they need.
Absolutely. And that is one of the things we teach at Urban Triage through our transformative education, is that the system of white supremacy, even though that is exhausting, like I said, it is exhausting mentally, physically, and all of it. And I think it's even more exhausting for me because of the work that I do, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm always inside the system, moving, navigating, smiling, you know, mm-hmm. politricking, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. not taking things personally, trying to navigate while getting the contract signed, getting the money we need, even though I want to be like, you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Instead, I say, okay, sure. What else can we do? Okay, we'll take that into consideration. Mm-hmm. All mm-hmm. right. Well, maybe we can consider this.
So you're surviving too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it feels like most of the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like within the context of white supremacy, like depending on the dynamics and when someone holds the bag, right? Mm-hmm. There's a whole additional level of like, okay, what I want to tell you, I can't really say right now, right? I would like to tell you that, like you said, you don't have the tools. Like, I get you, this is your best attempt right mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. but you don't have the tools and you're not understanding. And really what I want you to do is, never mind.
Right. But there's a difference between you and them, and that, at least from your perspective, and mm-hmm. that's that you want to gain more tools for yourself. And there's no reason why any moment should be any different. And for some, you know, coming up against the barrier means they're going to threaten our funding. They're going to, people are going to get hurt. And that's a real challenge. Like money goes away. People get hurt. If people complain too much, we have more issues that we need to deal with. And you're trying to get somewhere.
Yep.
And also, just like with our son,
navigating
when
that.
He is challenged and he's upset, it could mean for me, I'm not a good parent, right? I'm a failure as a father.
I'm a great parent, by the way.
Or it could mean that I have another opportunity to gain the skills and to learn the lessons that I need to navigate this better. It's practice
It's all practice work. Yeah. Life is about practicing, but it doesn't make it easier. And I want to choose to practice an environment that is more appreciative of Black people. I want to practice an environment where I could go to a dentist and they're Black. My school got teachers that are Black, and specifically Black male teachers. I want my son to be around Black male teachers. I want him to go to school.
Well, where's the Urban Triage Black Dentist Program?
This is the problem. I've been waiting on this. Everybody want us to do everything, okay? We got to do youth work, housing work, justice work, environmental justice work, saving everybody, advocating for everybody, and then everybody calls
us. Urban League, tax accountant, motorcycle repair.
Right, everything, right? But nobody want to donate, okay? That brings me to this. We do have, I'm on Saturday, never mind, I can't even talk about it. I should have talked about it last week. So never mind. Back to you, Eric.
Why, thanks, Ms. Grayson. You know, so we were talking about the tools, and I cannot stress enough how important this is, and really hear me.
Yeah.
We are doing the best that we can as parents.
Yes, we are, yeah.
You are doing the best you can as a Black woman leading an organization and a mother.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the best as a father, and that is never not the case. Mm-hmm. For anybody.
Right. Everybody's doing the best they can, when they're anti-Black, even when they're in the space with your kids and with you where you know they're not getting it. Right. They're doing their best.
Well, and even aside from the people that were surviving, we struggle to be present with our kids because we're still tying knots and negotiating our own guilt, our own trauma, our own shame around our failures.
Yep.
And that really does get in the way. And when we can just accept that that's there, and it's not something to be shameful of, it's something to welcome as an opportunity to grow, then we get a chance to step into better choices and different opportunities.
But we're all human, so we're all gonna feel messed up, right? You're gonna feel messed up about your life choices, relationship choices, the job that did this or the person that did this, your mama, your daddy. Yeah. Those are all natural human responses to life, you know? So I think the whole thing around awareness and presence is not to eliminate those thoughts, but to be with them.
Exactly.
To walk through the darkness, to be in the pain body, to feel what it feel like in your chest and your neck and your body. What is this really telling me, right? Mm-hmm. And allow that experience of witnessing yourself expand you, you know, and I think that's where the expansion comes. And to know, like, just to be expanded and present doesn't mean that you're walking around here namasteing,
right?
All in love, right? Because I could cuss you out and slap
and
you.
And it come from a real place,
you know, of love
and not from a
and
place
presence
of trauma
and grounding. Because I think we have that thing misunderstood that somehow when you're walking in the space of awakeness or awareness that you're out here loving and I smoke weed every day and I'm just happy. That's not what occurs. Right. Sometimes the best presence you could do is to chop somebody at their knees and tell them to stop playing with you, right? In the nicest way. Now,
the dangerous part of that, though, is that a lot of people say, well, that's what you can do. I don't have to be namaste all the time, but they're still communicating out of layers of their own issues and traumas, and they're not really seeing the being with the behavior or being with the emotions.
But layers is the key, right?
Right.
So through your practice work, you continue to pull back the layers, and perfection is never required. The universe doesn't require perfection. Flowers are birthed every day that look weird and they end up
beautiful.
That's a reminder for you as a parent and for your youth and your children. Like they don't need to be perfect. They don't need to be perfect in these white systems. You don't need to be perfect when you show up. If you don't have the words to express your feelings or communicate what you're thinking or needing for your children, don't feel like you can't. Because I think that's also what stops it. Like, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to say it. I don't want to cuss nobody out. If that's all you got is the cuss out, then let them have it. Because it's better than keep it in and having it eat up at you. Because it's all energy. And emotion is energy in motion. And you have to release it. And you have to learn how to release it in constructive ways. So I'm not saying go out there and cuss everybody out. But I'm also saying don't judge yourself and be gentle with yourself as you practice the work of expansion.
And the judgment comes from the meaning. Yeah. And a lot of times what we think something means, it actually doesn't mean that. It can mean so many other things. So that behavior can mean that, you know, we're a bad parent, but it can also mean that we're learning. It can also mean that it just was one of them days and that's okay.
That's okay.
You know
what I
mean?
Or
it can mean all of these other things. Yeah. So we get an opportunity to be with those layers and also help our children be with those layers too.
And it's something because it's the same thing we teach through to our staff and our, you know, my staff, I have to tell them all the time, it's not personal, it's personnel. Because when you do the trauma work with people, when they're held accountable or, you know, they feel like you're being unfair, there's always this sense of like, man, you did that for them or you didn't do that for them or you did this for me or you didn't do, whatever it is, people take things very personal. So even if you show up in a way where you feel like you're expressing yourself and you're saying what you need and what you want and people's feelings are hurt, you have to be okay with that too. Now, you might have to come back and clean up some stuff if you know, sometimes our words aren't always kind. So you have to also practice awareness and accountability
and the know your outcome.
And your outcome.
Know
what's
your
objective, you know? So again, you're listening to the Black Conversion Show on 92.7 FM Saturday morning. Join me next Saturday again for that ish on Black Community. Peace, love, and hair grease.